So we had decided between Chris and Fred and myself to kind of give a framework for our various talks. And for now, we've decided on the Four Noble Truths as being a good overall subject, but holding it in a way as a more of a theme or a framework so that we can each approach our individual talks, perhaps from slightly different vantage points or facets of the teachings. The Dharma is wide and deep, offers lots of room for exploration. And last week, Chris talked about particularly with particular focus on the first and third noble truth, and talked about dukkha and what dukkha means. He explained the origin of the word as being kind of like an off-balance wheel that produces a very bumpy ride. So if we think of life as being a journey and we're on a vehicle of some kind, it's a bumpy ride. He also talked about this is the word that gets translated as suffering. And the Buddha famously said that he taught one thing and one thing only, suffering and the end of suffering. So Chris talked about there being an end to suffering as well, and the ending of dukkha, or the realization of well-being. So I wanted to just start with talking a little bit about the particularly the first of the Noble Truths. And then I wanted to bring in the refuges, refuges going for refuge to the Buddha Dharma Sangha, and how that relates to our practice. Because if we're going to live the Four Noble Truths, which is what we're needing to do, we need a how. And this can be one way of kind of framing and looking at and holding how we do this. So, just as a reminder, the First Noble Truth, this is from Ajahn Sucitto's book on Turning the Wheel of Truth. Quoting the Buddha here, because there is a noble truth with regard to suffering. Birth is difficult, aging is hard, dying is painful. Sorrow, grieving, pain, anguish, and despair are all painful. Being stuck with what you don't like is stressful. Being separated from what you do like is stressful. Not getting what you want is stressful. In brief, the five aggregates that are affected by clinging bring no satisfaction. But there's a big clue in that last phrase, five aggregates of clinging, which is that bunch of things we think of as me. Bring no satisfaction. So relying on the form, feeling, perception, consciousness as bringing permanent happiness and satisfaction to our lives is just not going to happen. So it's that feeling of vague dissatisfaction with whatever is going on that is the dukkha that the Buddha has said we can free ourselves from. So this is in the realm of our subjective take on the experience of living, basically. Because sure enough, we may be having, you know, really pretty good time. Health is okay. We're, you know, satisfying. Basic needs are met. And still, there's anxiety about something. Even in the midst of having a good time, you can realize, oh, something may happen. This won't last. We may be in anxiety about the state of the world. Climate crisis, the pandemic. Name a few. We had a long list, things to be anxious about. Yeah. How's that? Yeah, right. Yeah. So it's kind of a constant. And even, you know, if you picture somebody who seems to have everything, you know, they've got money and all the pleasures of life and so forth and so on. And then there's, is that all there is? Does anybody else remember that song from a few years back? I think it was Peggy Lee, you know, is that all there is? Yeah, we want more. There is no way to satisfy the wanting. But you'll notice if you read the Four Noble Truths, there is nowhere that the Buddha said, you're suffering. It's your craving that's the problem. He isn't saying it's your fault that this is a problem to you. He's not making that judgment. Yeah. It's all stated in very impersonal terms. There is suffering is the flat statement, just an admission of this is how things are. This can be really a kind of relief because maybe all along I was thinking something's wrong with me. Must be. Yeah. So the fundamental cause of this kind of suffering that the Buddha is referring to, and that we have the promise of being able to understand and to free ourselves from, that kind of suffering, that kind of dukkha, this kind of unsatisfactory feeling of unease. The really basic root is ignorance. This is just that we don't know. We don't know the way things actually are. And not only that, we don't know that we don't know. So, you know, there we are, kind of driving around blind, thinking that we know. Oh, sure, I know what's going on. It's their fault, you know. If only those people would shape up, I would be perfectly happy. If only I had a chance to do that, I would be fine. So that's why I think it's the phrase is, suffering is to be understood. Because that means knowing. And that's waking up from ignorance. Not knowing that we don't know. And it's because our makeup, a given as human beings, is that our perceptions are distorted. So what we think about things that we see, they seem to be solid, they're not. They seem to be permanent, they're not. It seems like we should be able to hold on to something and keep it and be comfortable and stable. And that's just not how things are. Everything is changing all the time, but we don't know that. So in order to know that directly in our own experience takes some doing, then we have to have a guide as to how to do that. How are we going to be able to see clearly? So here's a hint. About the refuges. Taking refuge in the Buddha, the Dharma, the Sangha. So the Buddha, the word Buddha means awake. And one of the ways the Buddha is referred to is the knower. So in our practice, as we're taking refuge in the ability that we have to know, we're taking refuge in the Buddha. In that sense, that potential that we have to see clearly and wake up ourselves. And he wasn't called, the Buddha wasn't called the critic, the judge, by any of those terms, it's the knower. So this might give you a little bit of a hint about what clear seeing might be, simply knowing. And we'll go into that more, because recognizing dukkha for what it is going to be a first step. So how do we do that? You know, how do we even recognize it? So then if we're taking refuge in the Dharma, the other expression of Dharma besides the teachings of the Buddha is the way things are, the way things actually are. So very directly in our meditation instructions is seeing directly the way things are. Now, that's not just done by snapping our fingers and saying, oh, well, now I'm going to see clearly. This is the practice. This is the way of developing, cultivating bhavana, So if we are willing to do this practice, meditation, and in our daily lives, to do this process whereby we can begin to allow the mind to settle enough to see clearly, then that's taking refuge in the Dhamma, seeing things exactly as they are, not the way we think they are, want them to be, wish they were. And we all know from our own experience that that is not an easy task, because what is, I don't know about your mind, but my mind is full of wonderful ideas and, you know, opinions and notions and habitual ways of thinking that are highly conditioned habits of mind that I've been practicing for a long time. So that's like having dark glasses on, you know, and you can't really see clearly. To even get the mind to settle to the point where you can just focus attention on breathing in, breathing out. Boy, made it through one. Okay. Does the mind stay there? Easily? Settle right there? Sure. Not so easy. Not so easy. So this is the part about meditation that is training the mind. So it's our willingness to do this, willingness to do the practice again and again, coming back, breath, training the mind, settling, so that we can see this very clearly, be with, be receptive to this very ordinary moment by moment experience of just breathing. As one example. So how does that help? Did you know that your mind could be that clear, that calm? So that you could begin to see other things, other experiences as they arise. Begin to see the process, the flow of experience. Because it's the arising of the experience that we need to see. We need to know. This is anger arising. This is fear arising. What? This is calm. This is joy. Thich Nhat Hanh calls it looking deeply into the moment. So that we can begin to recognize what's actually happening. And this is about ourselves. because we don't really know about ourselves as well. Our self-view is not really the way things actually are. So mostly, we think there's a right way to be, and I'm not being it. And then we're beating up on ourselves. Not good enough. Got to do this, need to do that. Can we consider the possibility that there isn't a right way to be? And that we're fundamentally okay just as we are. And work from there. That our experiences that arise and pass, if we can observe that much, that they will arise and pass, are visitors and not who we are. The fundamental mistake is that characteristics come up and we identify with them. Angry person. Anxious person. So it's really interesting because our take on so much is distorted by these conditioned views that we have about ourselves and about others and about the world. It makes it very difficult to see clearly what's actually happening. The hindrances are called hindrances because they hinder our ability to see clearly. That's what they do. So if we're taking refuge in the Dhamma and we're willing, we're aligning ourselves with willingness to see what is true, what is actually happening, eventually who we actually are and are not. So that can be taking refuge in the Dhamma. Eventually, if we are able to do this practice consistently, we'll begin to see that everything is impermanent. Our experiences come and go. I mean, it's just watching the breath gives you that clue right away. It's changing all the time. Doesn't stay the same. The mind certainly doesn't stay the same. So that ability to be more of an observer instead of lost in our experience, instead of getting so tangled up in the content and the objects that we perceive and the objects that we come into our awareness, can we begin to be just with the observing, with the knowing. That opens up the possibility that we're going to recognize the foundations of the dukkha. It keeps us stuck to this sense of identification. Keeps us kind of wrapped up in these uneasy, distressful, distrustful modes. So if we can recognize ourselves more clearly for what we actually are and are not, and we can also perhaps extend that to others, because as we are also seeing others, that same attitude of something wrong. Taking refuge in the Sangha, if we view this Sangha as being a broad definition, can include, of course, all the teachers, past, present, the community of monks, nuns, seekers, all of the people who have influenced our lives, the people we're practicing with, our ancestors. You know, we can make it as broad as we wish. We're learning everything in relationship. So when we have this refuge in Sangha, we realize we have a very diverse population of people with a common aim and a common practice, even though there are differences among us. Then you can begin to establish some sense of trust and allow for learning in relationships. You know, how does this dukkha play out? How does this unsatisfactoriness play out in relationship? How can we go beyond this limited view of ourselves and others? So that's something that has been referred to as liberation within conditions. Let's see, so we have support for this training, guidance. Buddha gave plenty of instruction to help us with meditation, with daily life. But we have to do it ourselves. And each of us has to do it for ourselves, but we don't have to do it alone. This is so such a large subject that we may have to go on for months from one aspect or another. And I'm sure I was trying to just pick out, you know, a few points that you might find useful to reflect on for yourselves, because it's just different ways of looking at basic teachings, a different perspective maybe of some way that you hadn't thought about before. And it's always my hope that something will be helpful in some way. But I'd be happy to hear questions and comments And especially anything from your own experience about we need to be developing this relationship with the Four Noble Truths and with whatever helps us in our lives. There's one quote I came across: to be able to witness our life with wisdom and compassion.